Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 06-5253, Martin Cody and L. Appellant v. Timothy T. Cox, Chief Operating Officer, Armed Forces Retirement Home et al. Mr. Manager for the appellant, Mr. Longway for the appellant.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This is a case that was dismissed by the District Court as being moot simply because the language of the statute involved, in the view of the District Court, ended any violations when it was changed.
Did the statute change while you were litigating this?
Yes, Your Honor, it did.
Did you make any attempt to amend your complaint to reflect the change in the statute?
We did not, Your Honor. We had a
I wonder why you didn't. Didn't the statute seem to change the parameters? You'd be litigating under the current statute, not the pre-existing. Is that not correct?
Your Honor, we felt that our complaint was broad enough with the allegations, the way they were construed, to amend, to deal with.
Since the statute was no longer as, at least in one sense, as broad as it once was, that is to say it was more specific than it had been in the past, would it not have been more manageable had you amended your complaint to reflect the change in the statute?
Your Honor, we certainly
I'm not asking you to concede very much, counsel, but it does
Your Honor,
strike me as odd that you persisted in litigating under the old statute when the new one has. I'm thinking in particular about the presence of positions during business hours and such that are specified in the new statute that were not so in the old, if I recall.
Your Honor, we were called in when the renewed motion to dismiss was filed for what was characterized as a status conference. It was originally supposed to be a hearing on class certification.
Mm-hmm.
At the conclusion of the status conference, we were asked to set forth a date by which we would respond to the motion, and we agreed on a briefing schedule. I suppose, Your Honor, we certainly could have offered at that time to amend the complaint. And had we done so, certainly it would have been, in our view, clear error if the court had denied that.
Mm-hmm. We have no reason to believe he would have denied it.
There is no reason.
Right.
But
so if you had done that, perhaps we could have some of these questions a little more clearly answerable now than they are.
Your Honor, the 2 points I would make is, first of all, that there is case law that suggests that if the statute is amended in the course of the litigation, then the proper thing to do, and this is, I believe, the Supreme Court in the Lewis case, would be for the case to be remanded so that it can be amended.
And that would not have been necessary had you amended it before it got up here in the first place.
I suppose
that hasn't changed any. That was the Supreme Court law before, Supreme Court law now, and you could have avoided the possibility of remand for relitigation of an issue had you gone ahead and amended it in the first place, couldn't you?
The other point I guess I would make, Your Honor, is that this case was not decided by the trial court simply on the basis of the pleadings. And there had never been any contention that the pleadings were not sufficient. The court viewed this case not only on the pleadings, but on the basis of disputed facts that the court resolved without any explanation as how the court came to the resolution. And so it was not simply a question of whether our claims under a new statute fit within the parameters of the allegations, but rather whether the court, taking the record as a whole, including the resolution of disputed facts.
On the record as it stands, what should we do? How should our resolution read if you win?
Yes, Your Honor. Under the Herbert case, which I know Your Honor is familiar with, under the Wilderness Society case, what you should do is, this is a 12B1 motion with facts intertwined, jurisdictional facts intertwined with facts on the merits. It should be remanded to the district court for development of the factual record to allow discovery, as provided in the Wilderness case. And then at some point down the road in the trial court, there can be a full review of the jurisdictional questions.
Should we mention in there somewhere the possibility that perhaps plaintiffs should amend their complaint to conform to what they have known to be the state of the law for quite some time now and still have made no attempt to adapt it? I'm still not understanding why you're resisting the idea of amending your complaint to operate under current law instead of dead law.
Your Honor, we're not resisting that. We would certainly, upon remand, amend the complaint and then proceed with discovery and a full development of the facts. And certainly there's no difficulty, and I don't want Your Honor to perceive that we're resisting that in any way. This case was dismissed on a 12B1 motion as being moot. And as Your Honors know, there's a very heavy burden that the government has to bear in trying to show that the case is moot. If the court can grant any relief whatsoever that's meaningful, then the case should not be dismissed as moot. And certainly there are a variety of things that the court could and can do in this case to ensure that the veterans here get high-quality health care that is mandated under the statute. Just by way of example, the court can ensure that procedures are in place to ensure that physicians and dentists are actually available, that they are available on call after hours, that appropriate transportation is provided for residents, that medications can be obtained without waiting days so that the residents don't have to form carpools in order to get their medications, so they don't have to borrow oxygen from each other. Under the this court's decision in the Central Kentucky case, the statutory change will not moot a dispute unless it cures the problem. Well, Your Honors, the problem hasn't been cured here. This is not, as in many moot cases, where there's now some abstract or speculative kind of controversy. This is affecting real people not too far from here. In fact, some of them are here today, affecting their health care, affecting their well-being. And while Your Honor's point is well taken with respect to amending the complaint,
some of the things you're asking for in general terms, it would seem that given the specificity of the statute, you can't have in general terms.
Well,
it doesn't mean there aren't a great many other things out there maybe you still could have in general terms.
Your Honor, 2 points on that.
I don't see, for example, how we could require them to have on-site physicians or dentists 24 hours a day when Congress has found during business hours to be sufficient.
Your Honor, I would submit that the subsection C specific requirements are necessary but not sufficient to provide.
I'm probably taking you off what you ought to be arguing about, so I'll back away.
Stay with that for just a minute. You're saying that that subsection C, specific baseline requirements, right, that may have to be exceeded under the mandate of subsection B.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Now, subsection B creates a different problem, which is to say how a court would be able to adjudicate a claim arising under subsection B.
Your Honor, subsection B requires that the COO, the home, provide for the medical overall health care of the residents in a high-quality and cost-effective manner. We would submit that there's no difficulty in figuring out what is high quality and what is not. And frankly, we don't think we have to show that this is the worst facility in the world for the court to be able to tell whether the standard is being met.
Well, there's always something more that can be done. So my question is what kind of dispute would we be looking at if we are asking whether this is, whatever is provided is high quality?
What we would be looking at, Your Honor, is ensuring that physicians are actually available, that they are available.
But wait a minute. The availability required in C1 is easy.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm asking about B.
Well, I understand. For example, that medications can be available on site when people need them, that prescription drugs that a resident.
So we would be asked to say that not having medications on site when people need them is not high quality care.
Yes, Your Honor. Or that somebody who wakes up in the middle of the night and has chest pains, instead of having to call a security supervisor, as is currently the practice, has an actual physician that they can
talk to. Now, there you get problems, don't you? If Congress says that you'll have available at the facility during business hours the physician, how can we then say you have to have somebody available 24 hours a day?
It also says, Your Honor,
I'm not understanding your.
It also says available on call
yeah.
after hours, Your Honor.
But can we say, at least as a matter of law, maybe we can as a matter of law, that having a security person call the physician for you isn't compliance with that?
That's not what the security person does, Your Honor.
Pardon?
It's not what the security person does. The record is the security person calls a nurse or calls 911. Now, there are also transportation issues. There are X-ray and other examination issues. There are things in the record about people who go untreated for months, who have all kinds of just horrendous situations. And just having a physician available, frankly, doesn't satisfy the requirement for high-quality care.
How would we know when it's satisfied?
Your Honor,
have you stopped complaining? No. I mean, it can always be higher. It can always be better.
Your Honor, I would submit that this is, on the record in this case, it's not even close. And you certainly...
It may be that there are certain circumstances that are so abysmal that one could say, well, for instance, that no medical care is being provided. It couldn't be high quality if there's no medical care. But once you get beyond that, and we're asked to say whether it's high quality and cost effective, I'm at a loss to see how that would be framed.
Your Honor,
Of evidence we would pass on, and by what standard we would judge it.
I think it's no more different or more difficult, Your Honor, than what courts do every day when they decide if somebody's met the standard of reasonable care in the conduct of all kinds of activities.
Well, if it's the standard of care applicable to tort liability, that's one thing. But I don't know that that's high quality or that that's what you want.
I would also invite the court's attention to the Smith case, the Tenth Circuit case, which involved specifically a statute that referred to the obligation of the agency to ensure that states were providing high-quality medical care. And certainly there was no question raised.
Sorry, which decision was that?
The Smith case, Your Honor, the Tenth Circuit decision, which is referenced in our brief.
Yes. I don't see it in your...
I'm sorry, it's... I guess it's Heckler versus Smith.
Not in your opening brief.
Not in your table of authority.
I think it's in this, I believe, Your Honor, it's in the rebuttal brief because the issue of justiciability was only raised by the appellees in their opposition briefs. So we cited it in our reply brief.
And what was the law being applied then?
The law, that particular case involved a statute that called for the agency to ensure that high-quality care was provided. It was a suit to compel the FDA to take enforcement action. Now, in that particular case, it was not justiciable, but there was never any question about the phrase in the statute about high-quality care.
Why was it non-justiciable?
In that case, this was a refusal to take enforcement action, which is one of those rare instances, one of those circumstances where the courts have recognized that a matter may be not justiciable. That area, foreign affairs and diplomacy, is another area. These are very discreet.
So if that was the holding, then the court would not have expected to get to the question of whether the high quality of care was discernible or not. I mean, the fact that they didn't, did they address it in some fashion?
No, sir.
All right, so at most that case is agnostic on the subject.
Your Honors, I guess where that would leave us then is that when the Congress says high-quality care must be provided, shall be provided, that anything can happen, and the courts are powerless.
That may be.
Review it.
That may be. That's the question, is whether this is...
We don't enforce the Full Employment Act of 1946. And it's a goal that the Congress set, and it's not a justiciable proposition.
Well, Your Honor, I'd be delighted to address justiciability, but...
I'll give you a couple minutes on rebuttal for that.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Or whatever.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, the issue before this Court is whether Congress's recent amendment of 413 mooted appellant's complaint. We believe the District Court properly held it lacked jurisdiction in this case, because Congress's action ratified the current practices at the home and clarified that these health care decisions are made by the agency.
Are there not factual disputes as to whether, in fact, you live up to, assume for a moment, and I think we have to, that the new statute applies, are there not factual disputes as to whether the government, in fact, is meeting the standards of that statute?
Your Honor, in the brief of appellant, they raised some issues of whether we would meet the statute, Section C and Section D. Mm-hmm. They raised some allegations of that. Mm-hmm. That is correct. However,
I understand they sort of sandbag you by not amending the complaint, but excuse me, go ahead where you are.
Yes, Your Honor. You know, the main issue is that their complaint only addresses 413B. Their broad complaint is that it violates the high-quality health care language. Now, there's a dispute about, in the second
the
section.
The on-call part in particular and the requirements, specific requirements of the new statute, assuming that the court was properly adjudicating that, weren't there factual disputes about whether or not there is compliance with the on-call provision?
Your Honor, assuming that they could now, at this stage in the proceedings, go ahead and attack 413C, the on-call provision, 413C1, they do raise some allegations here at the appellant brief level that on-call to them means something different than it means to us. In other words, on-call to us apparently means a doctor's available by phone. On-call to them, they're alleging that the doctor should be able to come and see the patients when needed and that a doctor should be available to come there. There's several answers to that, I guess, and specifically if you look at the language, it's 413C1. In the first part of it, they say physicians shall be available at the facility. So they talk about being available at the facility. And 413, if they wanted on-call doctors to be available at the facility, they would have said on an on-call basis at the facility.
Well, does on-call not mean nothing less than we can call 911, or does it not mean that there has to be some physician who has a contractual relationship, at least, with the facility, or some sort of personal availability after all?
Your Honor, there is a doctor on the facility on call who has some relationship with him. The dispute, as I understand it from appellant's point of view, is that the nurse who is actually physically at the home during these times, she'll call the doctor if she feels necessary and seek guidance. Should we send him to the emergency room? Should we treat him here? Should we do something? But the patient isn't necessarily given access to the doctor, and the doctor doesn't necessarily come from wherever he lives to the home to treat someone in the middle of the night. So I think although an agency's interpretation would be granted deference under the APA, I think there's no dispute in terms of what you're saying. That's what everyone agrees the current status of the on-call doctor is. They would like the on-call doctor to mean more under C1. Of course, they did not raise that in their complaint.
It's not anyway. A factual dispute, is it? It's not a factual dispute.
Your Honor, is it a factual dispute?
I don't think so.
No, Your Honor, not at this point.
But I thought you were addressing Judge Senzel's question about whether there weren't disputed facts here.
Yeah, that was the question I was asking, and we're drifting away from it.
Yes, Your Honor. There are no disputed facts relating to the case. I guess, you know, I'm a bit confused because the case wasn't decided on the facts in this record here. The judge mooted the case. So while appellants do raise some issues in their affidavits that raise some factual allegations and discrepancies, those aren't things that were addressed by the court or part of his decision. And so while there
may be a very succinct statement of why the case is moot.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, please.
Your Honor, the case is moot is because, and I think the district court said it best when they said, the recent amendment, the appellees have defined high-quality health care in such a way as to be specifically contradicted by Congress. And I think that is perhaps a succinct statement of why, indeed, the case is moot. Because the request that they asked for, the request in their prayer for relief, they say, we would like you to restore the services previously provided, and that's what high-quality health care means, because that's all they were challenging. Well, Congress came back and left high-quality health care language in place, so certainly what they requested in their prayer for relief is not what Congress intended, because Congress clarified that in January 2006.
Let's just look at the request for relief for a moment.
Yes, Your Honor. It's at 21 and 22.
Yeah. A1, maintaining a primary treatment room staffed by a doc 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. That's not being done.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Is that being done when the court ruled?
Your Honor, that was not being done when the court ruled.
Okay, but was it overtaken by the statute?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, the statute did exactly what was being done at the home. What was being done at the home at the time was exactly what Congress subsequently ratified. They were having doctors there during regular business hours and on an on-call basis afterwards, which is what appellants complained about.
OK. Okay, maintaining the ability to provide promptly the medications required for the treatment of residents. Does the amended statute deal with that?
Your Honor, the closest it specifically deals with is in 413C3, where it basically vests the agency with discretion via the chief operating officer. It says, to ensure availability of health care, the chief operating officer, in consult with the medical director, shall establish uniform standards for access to health care. So what Congress did then in these specific instances, and again, the background of this is there was a pharmacy at the home prior to the chief operating officer making changes. He made changes to outsource the pharmacy and to have pharmacy services provided in a different manner, and they complained about that in their complaint.
And so A2 is really a request to restore that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and it's just the very general proposition in C3, you say, that overtakes them.
Yes, Your Honor. That's what I would say, that C3 basically does two things. One, it establishes that the agency has the discretion to make those decisions. The second thing it does is, you can see in the language of C3, doesn't refer to on-site care. And that's a big issue that they raised throughout their complaint. In other words, in C1, we talk about it needs to be available at the facility, which was an issue that was raised in many of these services. In other words, the complaint was that their pharmacy wasn't no longer at the home. Well, C3 doesn't say you need to have pharmacy services available at the home. They say access.
Though, counsel, the court could order that. What you're saying is we don't have to. The court shouldn't order that. It's not the law that we should be required to do that. But that's, the district court spoke in terms of mootness, saying a court can't do anything to remedy what the plaintiff wants. Is that not confusing the concept of mootness with a concept at a later threshold as to whether you have a claim for relief or not?
Yes, Your Honor, I do think they're intertwined. The specific relief that they want, I think, is mooted in terms at least of the doctors, as you mentioned. The other issues, I think, go
that through. That one may be, but as far as the things like the whether the medication is required for treatment of residents, et cetera, are required for high-quality health care, there may be other things wrong with that. I'm not asking you to concede that there's nothing wrong with it, but is that really moot? I mean, I don't see why a court couldn't order that. It might be erroneous to do so, but it isn't the kind of case where a court can't grant that relief. It's where they may not be entitled to the relief.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So is it correct to say this is moot?
Your Honor, I think it's correct to say that the specific complaints in their prayer for relief are moot, and the rest of it is non-justiciable, and that's why we kind of raise that other argument and feel that it's very important.
Let's deal with the first point, though, for a moment, that the specifics are requests for relief are moot. Mr. Bamberger suggested, and certainly reasonable, that the specific provisions, things that are specifically made available in C, in 413C, don't necessarily exhaust the requirements of 413B.
Right.
The B could, 413C could set a floor. A physician and a dentist available during daily business hours. But it would be perfectly reasonable and imaginable that the COO would say, in order to provide high quality relief, we need two physicians at the facility.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
So they're saying that's exactly what's something like that is exactly what's needed. Mm-hmm. And the answer that we'll see one sets the baseline isn't an answer to the question of whether more than the baseline is required by a B, and therefore mootness doesn't work and you have to get to your justiciability argument.
Your Honor, I think that's a fair characterization.
So the whole case isn't moot.
Your Honor, to the extent that there is relief that can be specifically identified, it is moot. And I think you're correct, though. I think justiciability is absolutely an important part of it.
COO actually issued these uniform standards?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, now, I hesitate to be too specific. He's issuing standards all the time, and that's what a chief operating officer does. When he establishes a new bus schedule, when he sets up x-ray services or contracts out a doctor, that's what he does. He sets up provisions. And what plaintiff or appellant would have you do is every time he set a new standard, he decided to move the pharmacy to one place or change duty business hours from 7:30 to 4 to 8 to 5, that they could challenge it and allege under 413B it's no longer high-quality health care. And so while you're right that they need to meet more than, they can meet more than what 413C says, They, in fact, do that all the time. And the health care is provided is well above and beyond the specific requirements that are listed in 413C1, and it's already done. What we're saying is just disability.
If that's true, then perhaps none of the cases moot. It all turns on justiciability.
Your Honor, I think this...
Because none of their requests for relief has been satisfied by the statute.
Your Honor, their request for doctors, I think, would be specifically moot unless you could say that by passing 413B prior to 413C, Congress still could hold more doctors are required than what they specifically identified in 413C.
Well, the COO could require, could say, yeah. Not the Congress.
Yes, but he hasn't chosen to do that here, so they wouldn't have a basis.
You're making everything but the specific surplusage by your argument. Everything in the statute about high-quality medical care, in your view, would be surplusage? There's nothing else that the COO or the home has to do except comply with those two specific things, or those few specific things?
Your Honor, they need to comply with 413C, the specific stuff, but that hasn't been raised in the complaint. Mm-hmm. And so...
And that hasn't been what I asked you either. You're saying none of the rest of the statute means anything. If they only comply with that, it's all over at that point, once they've complied with that. Is that what you're saying?
No, Your Honor, I would say they have to comply with the high-quality health care, but those are the decisions that are non-justiciable and properly the discretionary decisions of the agency. It's not that it doesn't matter. It certainly does.
But what is it at this point we're supposed to be deferring to if we're deferring to the agency's decision? This doesn't sound like mootness. We get a lot of cases up there where we're supposed to defer to something. We do defer to it, but not because it's moot. And this doesn't sound like mootness, does it, Counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. What I believe you should be deferring to is Congress clarifying that the chief operating officer at the hospital makes these health care decisions and that he has the ability to determine what type of health care should be provided there.
That all goes to justiciability.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honor.
And or deference, alternatively, mm-hmm. The degree of deference. Okay. I guess you've used your time. Thank you, Mr. Baldwin.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Your Honors, let me quickly correct something that where I misspoke before. I referenced the Heckler case. There are two Heckler cases,
yes,
and I referred to the Supreme Court case. I intended to refer to the Tenth Circuit case, which is
you mentioned the Tenth Circuit
in Re Estate of Smith. Now, in that case, the facts, contrary to what I erroneously said before, the facts were that it was a class action to compel the Secretary of HHS to develop and implement a system of nursing home enforcement that would ensure, quote, high-quality patient care, end quote. And the court, the Tenth Circuit, reversed the district court's refusal to hear the suit, saying, quote, at page 590, the Secretary must ensure that states comply with the congressional mandate to provide high-quality medical care and rehabilitative services. So the Secretary's failure to follow the focus of the Act to provide high-quality medical care was squarely before the court, and the Secretary's failure was found to be arbitrary and capricious, and the court recognized that the APA authorizes an injunction to compel agency action unlawfully withheld, and we submit that that's what has happened here, Your Honors. And finally, I'd just close by saying that on the issue of justiciability, Judge Leon denied the government's motion initially on justiciability, and then when the statute was made more specific, the government has, on the one hand, asserted that it's so specific that it precludes any claim beyond the specifics, and at the same time, it's so broad and vague that there are no standards to apply. I don't think they can have it both ways. Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, excuse me, but the claim that it's specific and addresses the subject as to which you want relief is their argument about C, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Wanted a doctor 24 hours a day, they say, look, the statute says during business hours, their position is that exhausts the subject.
That's their position, Your Honor.
But it's only to the extent that you argue then, well, but it doesn't exhaust it because C could impose a higher requirement that they come back and say justiciability.
That's what they're saying, Your Honor. Judge Leon disagreed, and we think on the basis of the Smith case and just common sense, and the facts of this case, which show anything but high-quality care, at a very minimum, the case is not moot, and that's what the judge's decision was. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Bamberg. Mr. Baldry, thank you. Case is submitted.